Hi, I'm Kara LaRance. This is WMUK 102.1 FM, Music, NPR, Local Arts and News from Western Michigan University. And joining me today here in Studio A is a Stolberg Silver Medalist, violinist Ariel Horowitz. Good morning.
Hi.
And Bruce Ujimura, conductor, music director of the University Symphony Orchestra, which will host this wonderful violinist in concert on Sunday. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning.
Ariel, I'd like to start with you and say it's wonderful to see you here again.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here. I love Kalamazoo. I'm always like in a really good mood whenever I'm here. I don't know why.
Well, I was lucky enough to watch you perform at the Stolberg competition last May. And for all of you listeners who have heard about the Stolberg for a few decades now and haven't taken the time to attend one, it is so worth seeing the celebration of music. I know it's a competition, but these young performers bring their personalities and more, and so much more, to the stages. And it turns out to be a really special day every single time. And I know for you, it's a lot more stressful, Ariel.
Yeah, I mean, I spent so long preparing for it, but I never felt like I was entering a competition. I just kind of felt like I was just going there to play music and to play my best, because you can never really control what a jury's going to think about you, and that's just not something that is worth thinking about just because it's so out of your control. So I just sort of thought, okay, I want to go and I want to play my best, and I just want to make music, and I want to enjoy all of the other competitors and just really get the most out of the experience that I possibly can.
You do get to form connections with your own peers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love these types of events because you meet so many talented people. And if you really take advantage and go listen to your peers play in the competition, you learn so much. I mean, everybody at the 2013 Stolberg competition was incredibly talented and really high level. I actually knew some kids from before who were really good friends. And I mean, it's amazing to be kind of in a group of such talented people.
Sure. Well, when you come to the competition, you have a bunch of prepared pieces that require piano accompaniment.
Yeah.
So maybe you've been working with a pianist that's been preparing with you, but the Stolberg provides its own pianist. So
right.
You have to kind of start an instant simpatico with this assigned pianist. How does that work out?
Yeah, it's always really different. Like when you've rehearsed a piece with a pianist for a long time and you've maybe performed that piece a lot with one specific pianist, and then you go to a competition or a festival or something like that and you get a new pianist and you have a 30-minute rehearsal and then you play. But I guess you just have to be really open to letting the music just happen and not trying to be too attached to your way of doing it. Because I remember, like, when I came to Stolberg, I was playing with Andrea Swan. She's amazing. She's a really, really wonderful pianist. And she's also a really nice person, too. I had so much fun in the rehearsal with her. There were, you know, things. Obviously, she's a very different pianist than my pianist at home. I mean, they're both wonderful, but just they're very different players. And I just kind of had to be really open to sort of feeling where her musical vibe was at that moment and where mine was and how we could make them merge. And I guess if you just kind of keep open to that process, it happens so much more quickly than if you try to say, like, well, I practiced it with my pianist at home this way, and I take this amount of time here. And because then, you know, it sometimes just doesn't mesh as nicely.
Right. I mean, when I review new CDs of music I'm used to, sometimes it opens up new ways of listening to a familiar piece. And other times I'm like, oh, that's awful. No, thank you. So it's good that you can keep your mind open and find new ways to make music and rehear the music,
yeah.
Replay it. That's really great. What was your concerto piece on for the competition?
I played Vieuxtemps Concerto No. 5 for the semifinals, which is a kind of structurally bizarre piece. It's a really wonderful piece, and I don't think it gets played enough. But the first movement is about 18 minutes long, so it's pretty long. And then the second and third movements are total about 4 minutes long. And the whole piece is sort of played as a one-movement concerto. So when I applied to Stolberg and I got in, which was like a super huge thrill, I was not expecting that at all, just because I know the level of that competition is so high. I knew that I couldn't exactly split the concerto, for the semifinals and the finals that I was going to have to play the whole thing in the semifinals. So I think most of the competitors just chose one movement from their concertos, but because Vieuxtemps is structurally so different than a normal concerto, I ended up playing the whole thing in the semifinals, which was kind of nice because it felt like just playing a complete work in a recital. It didn't feel like competition in a way.
Right. Or feel like cutting yourself off or leaving out important parts that you enjoy getting to.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see that you stuck with the French-speaking composers for your appearance on Sunday. Vieuxtemps, he wasn't French, was he? Was he Belgian?
He was Belgian, yeah.
I insult Belgians all the time by calling them French. But yes, but Chausson is French, and he wrote this really interesting piece that you'll be playing called Poème. It's not concerto, it's called Poème. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I played Poème in the finals at Stolberg because I knew I needed something that wasn't just a movement from a concerto to play in the finals. That was another complete work. And it's a kind of symphonic piece for violin and orchestra. And personally, it's one of my favorite pieces in the violin repertoire. It's so kind of mysterious. It has so many intricate harmonies, and I love it. The piece was actually commissioned by the violinist Eugène Izay. He asked Chausson to write him a violin concerto, and Chausson responded that he didn't feel comfortable writing a concerto at such an early point in his career. So he decided that he would write a shorter work for violin and orchestra. And he based the piece, Poème, on an actual poem called, I think it's The Song of Love Triumphant, is what it's called, by Ivan Turgenev. And it's a very interesting poem. It's about a love triangle, and one of the guys goes off to India and becomes entranced with sorcery because the love of his life falls in love with his best friend.
Oh, of course.
It's pretty rough, yeah. And so he becomes kind of enchanted with sorcery. And you can hear a lot of those themes in the piece. There's kind of these like really sort of magical trills and these really bizarre harmonies that kind of sound very sort of supernatural in a way, I guess.
That's intriguing that to me about this piece is that it is a lot about atmosphere and magic and not this big extroverted flashy thing. And it speaks to a certain maturity on your part that I'm assigning you for picking out this piece. I really like it. So Bruce, what's it like when you have these concerts with Stolberg medalists that are coming to appear with the orchestra? What are these occasions like for from your end?
Wonderful. Just one. First of all, you have a violinist of Ariel's caliber, technically, that can play the instrument well, and in Ariel's case, really quite mature musically. I'm giving you all kinds of
knowledge. Thank you.
And flexibility. The girl really listens, and she's a really fine musician, which is first in my book, rather than violinists. You know, good violinists, cellists are dime a dozen, but the few that really are good musicians are rare, and Ariel happens to have those gifts, which is very good, because the first thing she did when we rehearsed was she's ready to be flexible, which is completely different than in some cases, you know, where, like she told you, you know, you play with one pianist, you get used to a lot of things, and you know, and that's very hard to break, mind you. So it takes a more mature musician that's played a lot of chamber music or just has that kind of mind to be able to bend and flex and so forth based on what they hear. That's all what it is, like conducting. So you can have the most preconceived notions that you want in your mind of what something sounds like, but you know what you have to do? You have to start conducting and start listening to the ensemble. And that may be very different from your interpretation. Might be bad, might be good, but you have to be able to, as a musician, be able to shape it and so forth. So that's what we're having fun doing with this very difficult piece, actually, for the interaction with the orchestra. And the solo. The solo violin part is phenomenal because probably Izay had a big say in, you know, the heat soaring melodies and lots of, you know, difficult and flashy writing, double stops and so forth and so on. But it's clumsy orchestrally, you know, and so Chausson was not a great orchestrator. golly, you know.
I think he was a late bloomer of some
kind. In fact, he was one of those. I think he was independent from my research. He was rather wealthy, and of course, in that circle, right, of Albanese and so forth. And you know, was kind of shy about his composing, and so he wrote this glorious piece of music, which again has wonderful ideas, and is in the Impressionist. We'll talk about this later. Tradition of, it's not really about anything; it's about suggesting things, love, sorcery, intrigue, et cetera, et cetera. And La Mer is totally like that. So that was the whole Impressionist. So in that way, it succeeds, this piece. But, you know, ensemble, it's terribly difficult. I mean, if you watch all, Ariane and I were talking about the interpretations. Well, we go from, what did we say, on the short side, 14?
I think Heifetz's recording is 13 minutes long. Yeah.
To 18 minutes.
Yeah, that's closer to the one I have queued up here.
Yeah, okay, you know, lots of movements do that, but to vary for 5 minutes, that's a huge amount of music or time in music, you know. And so that gives you an idea of how, first of all, how it's like Bach, you know, how many different interpretations there are of this piece and how many violinists sort of, you know, I think it gives the violinist license to be flexible like that, depending on what kind of things they like to show off, you know. Great bow arm, beautiful sound, or really unbelievably flashy as a Heifetz, right?
Yeah.
For example. Just tossing off those things, which I think only he could do.
You know what I mean? There's some really nasty runs in that piece. Yeah,
some people like it real slow because they have this gorgeous sound and they engage the audience in the focus is on their sound. And they have to have incredible bow control, right, to do that.
Yeah.
And really incredible courage, because that's asking a lot, you know, where the orchestra all of a sudden has to slow down to an adagio. There's no adagio written, but based on the violin part, it works just fine, you know. So that's difficult to follow, right? And when I say clumsily orchestrated, I mean, you know, I don't want to go into too many specifics, but, you know, he first of all picks a compound meter for most of the piece, which is always difficult. And the Impressionists love that meter because, A, it had, ooh, we can play around with the duple rhythm, too, while we're doing that. Also, it gave them the dance, which is so apparent in many of the Impressionist music, whether they knew it or not, you know. The dance, 6-8, can be all kinds of dances, which they really like. As are, you know, the other, España. España is written in 3-8. It's very interesting. So they love the compound meter, you know.
Yeah, the concert opens with España by Chabrier.
Yeah.
That'll be led by your graduate conductor, Jeffrey Spener. And then we hear the poem by Ernest Chausson featuring Ariel. Then the famous Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas. You know, when I went to our record library to find a recording of the Sorcerer's Apprentice, I was so sad when I opened the page and saw Dukas wrote so few published pieces.
Right.
He's famous for this, and we've got a piano sonata, we have a fanfare to something, and he was very self-critical.
Same thing with all the other Chausson. I mean, he's practically known for this. Maybe the string quartet with the violin solo and piano.
I like his symphony in B flat.
But not much more than that, you know. And the same thing with Dukas, a little bit more in the times, but the stuff that's played now is not so. Debussy, different story, of course.
Yes, you know? So you're closing the concert with La Mer.
Yeah, a Chabrier also. Not too much that's known past España, right. At least in the orchestrally, you know, so.
I should tell folks out there that the concert is Sunday at 3 o'clock, and it is free and open to the public in Chenery Auditorium. This is downtown on Westnich. Chenery Auditorium, a beautiful place to hear.
714 South Westnich.
Yes. So I'm not sure when you're going to hear it. Another opportunity to hear a free orchestral concert at Chenery Auditorium. So 3 o'clock Sunday. Let's take a short break for some music and hear a little of this poem we've been talking about. This is Joshua Bell, a former winner of the Stolberg competition and the Royal Philharmonic. Well, of course, we can't give away the whole piece, the poem by Ernest Chausson, because the live performance is coming up Sunday, and the guests here in the studio would like to encourage you to go to that. That's Bruce Uchimura, conductor of the Western Michigan University Symphony Orchestra, and soloist Aria Horowitz, who is a Stolberg Silver Medalist from 2013. And Ariel, you'll be performing this work on Sunday in Chenery Auditorium. I have to ask you, you study with a famous violinist, Itzhak Perlman.
I do, yeah.
And is this something he's coached you on at all?
Yeah, actually, I just started studying with him, so I still kind of every morning have to wake up and pinch myself to make sure that I'm not dreaming. But I've had 3 lessons so far with him, and 2 of them have actually been on the Chausson because I've had this performance coming up. And he kind of offers a different perspective. I've never had a performer as a teacher before. So, I mean, he has probably more performing experience than anybody. And, you know, he's really able to offer a different insight. Like, for example, in certain passages, he's like, you really have to just sing it out or play really, really loudly, because otherwise you're going to drown because the orchestra is going to be so loud there. And then he'll be like, no, you have to use this bowing because you have to really project here. Or he'll be like, okay, here you can play a little softer because there's not too much orchestration in this one part. But just because he knows the repertoire so well, and he's probably played Chausson like maybe 6 or 7 times with various orchestras, and I'm sure with piano even more. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting working with him.
Well, truly practical advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like world experience, yeah. Advice. To
absolutely
to make it come across for the audience,
yeah,
you know, to project and in person, as he is as sweet as he seems.
Oh, he's wonderful. He's so nice, and he really works really hard to not seem intimidating in lessons, just because it could be an issue. You know, you're studying with Itzhak Perlman. I could imagine a lot of people would get super, super nervous to go into lessons with him. But no, he has everybody call him Mr. P. He likes to be called Mr. P because he thinks Mr. Perlman already sounds like too
formal.
It's too formal. It puts like a block in your mind, like I'm playing a lesson for Mr. Perlman. But if you think I'm playing a lesson for Mr. P, it's not as intense, I guess. He never dresses up for lessons. Maybe I shouldn't say that on an interview, but he always wears like jeans and a t-shirt, and he's super casual, and he's really nice. I mean, he's a really good teacher. He has a lot of experience, and he knows how things should sound, and but he makes tons of jokes, and he's super casual, and yeah, he has tons of stuffed animals in his studio and pictures of himself and his kids, and yeah, he's just a really nice, down-to-earth guy.
I got to say, one of my favorite of all YouTube videos is simply Itzhak Perlman telling young musicians that if you can't play the piece that like you want to, just slow it down and play it at a slower tempo.
So true.
And coming
so
from
true.
Yeah, the great Itzhak Perlman, it's like, of course, yes. And he just made it all seem so easy and simple. He was acting as Mr. P in the video, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great advice for any age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I should say, you know, Perlman, the difference between the teachers that I studied with in my years, Juilliard years and so forth, and Ariel studying with, that these guys were responsible. Itzhak Perlman, Zuckerman, Kyung-Hwa Chung, people like that, and Yo-Yo Ma, right, for the cello, of being human beings, everyday guys, rather than artists, you know, that everybody comes to and... You know, there's that aura around them. They're also fathers and husbands and human beings, and you know, and I think that's far more important. So their generation, Itzhak and Yo-Yo and stuff, perpetuated this idea, right? Yo-Yo appeared on Sesame Street,
right.
And played alternative music with Edgar Meyer and Mark O'Connor and Silk Road Project and all that stuff. And that's fabulous. Because that's what music should be, accessible to all, not this old, not that I'm diminishing, the considerable contributions of Jascha Heifetz and David Oistrakh and Leonard Rose and Piatigorsky and all the greats of my, you know, what idols that I saw. But that was gone. It was the same with conducting, the tyrant conductor, right? Gone are those days. Why? Yeah. Because musicians are so much more competent, you know, now. They're highly trained. And so you can't be a jerk and expect to get away with it, you know. So I think that that's changed music a lot, fortunately.
As was lampooned so effectively by Bugs Bunny
and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, right, with Mickey Mouse, right? Yes. That came very early, but yeah. I think that's how people know Sorcerer's Apprentice, right? Because they associated with the movie Fantasia with Mickey, you know, with all his brooms and, you know, being naughty, right?
Absolutely.
For example.
Well, that was really well done. I mean, it didn't hurt the music.
No, not at all.
But the music sounds great on its own, too.
In fact, it's based on a Goethe poem of the same sort. You know, about this sorcerer's apprentice, really, that he gets naughty and the sorcerer cuts him off and fixes everything. You know, but the spells get out of control because the young Mickey, in this case, didn't know what he was doing. And that's what the poem says, actually.
The orchestra performed just last Sunday in the Collage Concert, the WM Music Showcase Concert. And I heard that went rather well, Hungarian dance.
It did. And nothing like a little Brahms. Well, it's not Brahms. Brahms' translation of a Hungarian dance. But yeah, we did the famous one, number 5.
But this has been the focus of your first couple months.
Correct.
In session at Western.
Difficult.
What did you start with?
What do you mean?
When you looked at the program, what did you think, first day of rehearsal, what do we need to start with?
Well, you always need to get through the notes. You need to get through the music. That's the first order of business because I have to see what I'm up against. Do they take to this quickly, or is it going to be is it just notes? Is it musical things? And this concert is very troublesome in that way because it's both. You know, the notes are difficult, and they mean nothing until you attach some kind of musical impulse to it. And that's not necessarily how the mind thinks in collective string playing. Shall we say, you know? And then the woodwinds, too, they have very exposed parts, but, you know, if they don't know how to play it or don't have a notion of how to play it, then it becomes much more difficult. I mean, remember, the history of music has passed by this time. And when Debussy wrote La Mer, Ducas wrote Sorcerer's Apprentice, Chausson wrote the poem and so forth, music had developed quite a bit. And this was an alternative, right, to the what was going on in Germany, right? Wagner and Strauss and so forth and so on. And a shocking alternative at the time where you can use music, the orchestra, the solo violin, whatever it may be, to conjure up the sea, the wind, the waves, and things of that nature. You know, in love, intrigue, et cetera, et cetera. And that's very difficult to translate on a page of music. And through the sound of an oboe or a cello section or the violins playing all kinds of, you know, stuff that, you know, if they looked at, they go, okay, that's kind of hard. But in context, the notes are almost not important. It's the gesture, you know, and the suggestion of whatever it is that that you think, you know, Debussy was trying to conjure up at the time.
Yeah, very well put. It seems like in a lot of this late Germanic music, you can see how it's happening, why it works, and because so-and-so is playing this and so-and-so is playing this and it works this way. But in this French Impressionist music, you're like, I don't know how this effect is achieved.
No, there's no relationships, right? Remember, the history of music has taught us repetition is a good thing. So sonata allegro form begins with something and then goes through some harmonic changes and then repeats that something. Debussy doesn't do that. He doesn't really care about that. I mean, he does. There are certain motives and so forth that appear, juxtaposition of duple and triple rhythm. But after that, it's all about the suggestion of the C. The notes suggest that Debussy actually never spent a lot of time at the C, but he loved it, and he actually got more of his inspiration from paintings and things, you know, of the C. And so this is what his music was trying to really conjure up. So the Impressionism is more the power of suggestion than taking verbatim something. You know, why does the Sorcerer's Apprentice work? You know what I mean? Because it conjures up all these notions. I mean, maybe it helped to watch it on Fantasia, you know. So that's what that's what this is all about. But it's very difficult for the musicians unless they're very experienced, you know.
My guests are Bruce Uchimura, conductor of the University Symphony Orchestra, and violinist Ariel Horowitz, who will be performing the poem by Ernest Chausson. Concert is Sunday at 3 o'clock in Chanery Auditorium, free and open to the public. Let's take a break now and hear Movement 1 of La Mer by Claude Debussy. Music from La Mer. We heard the first movement of this Debussy masterpiece performed in this recording by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, led by Naima Yervi. And my guest is Bruce Uchimura, conductor of the University Symphony Orchestra, which will perform this piece on the Sunday program at 3 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. Also here is violinist Ariel Horowitz, who is the silver medalist of the Stolberg competition. She's going to be featured in music of Chasson. Bruce, though, I picked out this recording especially because it's our Detroit Symphony, and you have a special collaboration later in 2014.
We do. And that is very exciting for us because David Colson, our esteemed director, has negotiated with Detroit Symphony, and Maestro Slatkin is coming to conduct us. Not just coming to conduct us, but we're actually going over to Detroit Symphony Hall to play a concert. Laurie Simmons is going to play the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, and we're going to do an overture, if you can call it that, timepiece it's called, by Leonard Slatkin's wife, Cindy McTee, who's a composer in residence at North Texas State University. And then Maestro Slatkin will conduct the orchestra, Hindemith Symphonic Metamorphosis, on themes of Carl Maria von Weber. So,
is there a bus I can get on?
we haven't gotten that far yet, but yeah. Yes, we might accommodate our groupies like the Broncos.
Yeah. What month is this? In next
March, end of March, it's going to be in. That's very exciting for us.
That is really exciting. It's been a while since a big collaboration like that came along, and the Orpheus Orchestra.
Correct. They're here this semester, which is very wonderful for our students, and they're coming in. They're actually in residence here, so they're coming in four or five times. Sometimes coach smaller chamber music groups, but mostly to work with what they call, you know, they have a whole principle and philosophy of conductorless orchestra. So I guess I don't need to be conducting the university orchestra anymore, which is wonderful because that's really how music should be made, you know, without the conductor. I mean, you need the conductor for many things, but a lot of times you should be able to do it without the conductor, and that's their philosophy. So they select what they call a core, which is basically your principal players that need to be with the score and need to be like you, Ariel, and I would sit down and play quartets or something like that. We'd be discussing, now, what are you doing here? What are you thinking? You know, what tempo and what kind of, why are you taking that articulation, so forth and so on. And that's what they'll learn this semester with coaching from the Orpheus representatives that are coming in four or five times this semester, culminating with a conductorless concert with the University Orchestra on Thursday night. This is the last few days of the semester. The fourth, I think, or fifth. And then the Orpheus the next night with the whole orchestra is coming to conduct.
All of this is...
A guest clarinetist, I think. Frost, his name is, something like that. Martin Frost.
Martin Frost?
Yeah, you know this guy?
the Swedish virtuoso. He's in a whole category by himself.
Okay, so he's coming to perform with them and on their concert.
Wow.
So that's what we're working towards, which I think is very exciting. And hopefully more of it, you know, in the future. I don't know if they can come every year, but it's certainly very beneficial to our students and our program to have that philosophy and those highly trained musicians come in and work with them.
Well, if this is having listeners in Radio Land reaching for their calendars, they can find out more through the Miller Auditorium box office. That's milleraudatorium.com/SOM for School of Music. All of the School of Music dates are listed there.
Yeah. Also, the School of Music website has a link to our orchestra website, which will give a few more details.
Well, we are running out of time this hour, and Ariel, I don't want to leave without asking you. I know you're only 17.
Yeah.
And you're a freshman at Juilliard, and I'm sure you're leaving a lot of your options open, but looking ahead, what do you want to accomplish? What are you setting as your goals for the next few years?
I hope that I can just continue to make music and continue to love making music. I love making all sorts of music. I love orchestral playing. I love chamber music. I love doing stuff like this, like being a soloist with an orchestra. That's always such a thrill, and you learn so much from that. So I hope that going forward, I get to do a lot of everything and just keep learning and keep making music and keep learning from peers and conductors and, you know, all that good stuff. So,
well, you know, Ariel, you can consider Kalamazoo your adopted Midwest city.
I know
you have a
Thank you.
Home in Indiana, but you're always welcome here.
Thank you.
So nice to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And Bruce, final thoughts on Sunday?
It's free.
ever practical, Bruce Uchimura. And I'd say that's there's a lot more incentive than that.
I call it the French Revolution. That's what I call it, because these guys really revolutionized music as we know it on this program. So come hear it.
This is WMUK 102.1 FM, Music NPR, Local Arts and News from Western Michigan University.